of a controversial podcast.
Sepsis is a time-sensitive critical illness.
A revised one-hour bundle has now been developed.
Unfortunately, sepsis is not similar to stroke.
I don't like the information being used in that manner.
This is what's truly sparked the controversy.
It gets a little bit dicey in terms of the quality of evidence actually out there.
I'm conflicted with this.
Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine. So happy that you're joining us for this podcast, a bit of a controversial podcast based upon some groundbreaking new articles that were just published simultaneously in Critical Care Medicine, along with Intensive Care Medicine. But before we jump into this controversial discussion and topic, let me say a quick hi to my outstanding co-host, Dr. Peter W., Dr. Rob Rodriguez, and Dr. John Greenwood. Peter, how goes it this podcast?
Goes just fine. Things are cooking pretty hot in New Orleans these days. So the summer, there's been no spring. It went jump right into summer.
How about you, Rob? Is it just as hot on the West Coast?
No, it's quite the opposite. We're having a second sort of winter now. Today, in fact, it was in the 50s and not exactly balmy.
And John, how are things up in Philadelphia?
Philly is great this time of year. We just completed a really amazing weekend course ECMO symposium that went well. We actually surprised the audience with a intra-conference demo where we brought in and basically did a mock cardiac arrest with CPR optimization leading up to eCPR activation. With a morning of lectures, it woke up the crowd. That was a lot of fun. But overall, everything's going great up here. Thanks.
That's outstanding. I'm sure it was an outstanding educational experience for all who attended.
I also do want to give a shout out to our residents who at SAEM won the Sono Wars competition.
Sweet.
Pretty
stiff, involved competition, and our three residents pulled it off. They also won the Jeopardy contest as well. So our residents did a nice job at SAEM.
Strong work.
Strong work, and congratulations. And I guess to that end, we should say congrats to all of the residents who are finishing their programs literally this month. Everybody will be graduating, lots of graduation ceremonies, a really wonderful time. So we have a number of residents across the U.S., also across the world, listening to this podcast. So our heartfelt congratulations go out to all of you. All right, well, let's turn our attention to some clinical controversial medicine, and we're going to get back to sepsis. And the reason we're getting back to sepsis, although we've talked about it a lot, is because this month in critical care medicine and intensive care medicine, the Surviving Sepsis Campaign published their 2018 update, in essence, in which they're combining now the 3 and 6 hour bundle into a 1 hour bundle. So it's created a lot of controversy, a lot of concern, as this is an international document and guidelines for resuscitation of the patient with sepsis and septic shock. The article itself, lead author is Levy, and it's titled The Surviving Sepsis Campaign Bundle 2018 Update, once again found in both Critical Care Medicine and Intensive Care Medicine, their June edition. Peter, take us through a little bit of background here.
Yeah, just so that our listeners have an even playing field to start with, just understand that the bundles were actually developed separately from the guidelines, but they've been really the core, even central to the implementation of the Surviving Sepsis campaign, even from their first publication in 2004. These bundles were designed to be updated as new evidence came to light and was published on particular sepsis and how patients benefited from their care. Current evidence really has demonstrated an association with bundle compliance and improved survival in those patients with sepsis and septic shock. So that's really why we're pushing bundle out there at all. And in the U.S., bundles were adopted by multiple associations, quality foundations, New York State Department of Health, and even CMS. And so currently, CMS is reporting publicly bundle compliance. They're not holding people accountable for it, but they are tracking compliance. So in response to the Surviving Sepsis campaign in 2016, that update, a revised one-hour bundle has now been developed. And the core is what we'll be talking about today.
Yeah, and this is what's truly sparked the controversy, not only across the U.S., but across the world, about this one-hour bundle. So, Rob, take us through the important points. This isn't a very long article, a long document, but what are the important points with this bundle? And then actually, what are the components of this one-hour bundle?
Yeah, so the main exciting, if you will, thing about the changes are that the three-hour and six-hour bundles have been combined into a single one-hour bundle. And the second notable thing about that is that time zero in that bundle is the time of triage in the ED. So evaluation and resuscitation, if you're going to follow these bundles, should begin immediately at triage. It may take more than 1 hour to complete resuscitation, but you really should, according to these bundles, begin your evaluation and resuscitation immediately. And so what are the components of the one-hour bundle? Well, first, it begins with an immediate measurement of a lactate level. And if the lactate level is greater than 2, you're directed to remeasure the lactate after certain resuscitation measures. You're also mandated to obtain blood cultures prior to antibiotic administration. You should give broad spectrum antibiotics, and you should begin rapid administration of a 30 cc per kilo crystalloid infusion if the patient either has hypotension or a lactate level greater than or equal to 4. And the last portion of the one-hour bundle is that you should use vasopressors if the patient is hypotensive during or after fluid resuscitation, and your target MAP should be greater than or equal to 65 millimeters of mercury. So again, the main points are that the 3 and 6 hour bundles have been combined into 1 hour bundle, and time zero begins immediately at the time of triage.
So this is going to really stress our triage systems, our early identification. I think we're all on board that early identification is a must and really the key to starting resuscitation of patients with sepsis. But as we begin to think about this 1 hour, how much is really going to be occurring at triage? And I got to think, if we're recommending this 1 hour bundle, it's got to be based on robust evidence. So John, tell us about the strength of these recommendations, the level of evidence. Where are they coming from with this document?
It's a great question, Mike. And unfortunately, sepsis is not similar to stroke or STEMI, where there's a pretty clear identification of what the problem is. And as a result, I think over the literature over the years has really struggled with defining this syndrome and if there's a true diagnostic test that we can trigger an intervention. But if we look at the evidence, in particular to certain components of each of these bundles, and get a sense of how strong the evidence is to make these changes. So in 2016, the SSC bundle elements, their strength of recommendations, level evidence are basically fairly low overall, with some mixed in of some strong and moderate quality here and there. So let's start with lactate. So measuring lactate level. So the recommendation to measure lactate and then remeasure if greater than 2 received a weak recommendation with a low quality of evidence. And I think largely this revolves around this number of 2 that really hasn't been studied all that rigorously. But again, a weak recommendation with low quality of evidence. Now, the next one is obtain blood cultures prior to antibiotics. And in general, I think this is a best practice statement. Certainly, if we can have a early source identification, that'd be helpful. It wouldn't be not contaminated, but fixed with antibiotics. That would be helpful. Now, the one I think that there's really good evidence for is early broad spectrum antibiotics. And this was given a strong recommendation with a moderate quality of evidence. So of the number of papers that have been published showing that early antibiotics, essentially trying to achieve source control, have had one of the biggest impacts on mortality from sepsis, this was only graded with a moderate quality of evidence. And then things get a little bit different. So we look at the rapidly administer 30 mLs per kilo crystalloid for hypotension or lactate greater than 4. It was a strong recommendation by the group, but a low quality of evidence. And even after this was published, a few other papers have looked at the fluid question, and it gets a little bit dicey in terms of the quality of evidence actually out there. Now, as opposed to fluids, approaching hypotension with vasopressors and apply vasopressors early, that was given a strong recommendation. with, again, only a moderate quality of evidence. So if we go down the list for these bundle components, there's a moderate quality of evidence for some of these, in particular being antibiotics, but the rest is really just best practice and recommendations by the Surviving Sepsis campaign.
So I think that's important that you touch on that, John, especially with the emphasis that's going to be placed on implementing this one-hour bundle, that it's not as strong as many would suspect or expect with international guidelines. So keeping that in mind, let's just kind of run quickly through the components of this bundle and talk just a little bit more deeper on that. Peter, your thoughts on lactate.
So a little bit about the lactate. It's really not a direct measure of tissue perfusion, but it has adequately served as a surrogate for that. People have kind of extrapolated elevated lactates as being hypoperfusion. There have been some randomized controlled trials that demonstrated a reduction in mortality with lactate-guided resuscitation. In other words, as we resuscitated and the lactate came down, the majority of these patients did better. If the lactate never came down with resuscitation, it was really a hint towards those patients doing poorly or having higher mortality. If the lactate is elevated, it should be followed every 2 to 4 hours to normalize lactate. And again, this was along the lines of best practice, and the guys who initially did the studies made that recommendation. We're going to talk a little bit more about lactate as we go on, though.
All right. Great, great points. Now, Rob, your thoughts on blood cultures and broad spectrum antibiotics.
Yeah, so the background on this is that blood cultures have been traditionally promoted to being done before the institution of antibiotics. And the data underlying that comes from some old studies that show that sterilization of cultures can occur within minutes of the first dose of appropriate antibiotics. So with those studies in mind, it's been recommended that cultures be obtained before antibiotics to optimize identification of pathogens. And it's recommended to get at least 2 sets, 1 aerobic and 1 anaerobic. Now, there's not a lot of data that shows that this truly improves outcomes, but that's the background behind it.
And how about antibiotics?
With regard to the antibiotic choice specifically, there's shown to be a link between the early administration of broad spectrum antibiotics to cover all likely pathogens. We were formerly taught to try and tailor antibiotics to the particular cause of sepsis or potential infection, but more recent data suggests that going broad is the way to go in terms of the patients who arrive with signs of sepsis. And as you can imagine, in a patient that presents to the ED and you're trying to get the antibiotics on board within an hour, it'd be very difficult to get a source of sepsis or source of infection. And so, therefore, the thought is to go broad.
All right. And John, bring us home on hemodynamics. Thoughts on fluids and vasopressors.
Well, in general, it's actually really interesting that there are multiple philosophies on how to stabilize patients with sepsis-induced hypoperfusion or hypotension. And in general, the understanding of the pathophysiology is simply that you're in a vasoplegic state. So the capacity of your vascular system has grown due to vasodilation. So one thought in general is that fluids are crucial for the stabilization of this hypotension related to septic shock. Now, contrary to that is that some of the evidence indicates a positive fluid balance, particularly over the course of days in the ICU, can be harmful. And fluids beyond the initial resuscitation, you really have to be careful how much you give. We all know the duration of time in which crystalloid stays in the intravascular system is fairly short, in addition to just due to the capillary leak that can happen with sepsis and everything else, it can cause a lot of organ injuries down the road. So really, we should be using our fluids to improve cardiac output when needed, and that's how we guide our fluid challenges. But beyond that, the question is of whether or not there's a lot of value there. The flip side to that coin is the group that says, well, we're vasodilated, we need a vasopressor, and we can just contract the size of the system. Now, in general, Surviving Sepsis campaign has leaned on fluids first, followed by vasopressors. And so if the blood pressure or a MAP goal greater than 65 hasn't been achieved with initial fluid challenge, then pressors should be started rapidly.
Outstanding. Now, here's the tough question. Peter, I'm going to go to you first. We're used to these recommendations in terms of a 3 and 6 hour bundle. We're now down to a one-hour bundle. Getting these patients early identification. We've got to get antibiotics on board. But, oh, by the way, get your cultures first. Give them fluids. And even in that first hour, if they still need hemodynamic support, give them vasopressors. Follow that lactate. Do you get it back in the first hour? Does all of this make sense? Is it really robustly supported by the evidence? And John touched on that. And is it feasible for many EDs across the U.S. and really for that matter across the world to hit this one-hour target? What are your thoughts?
You know, I'm conflicted with this. And I will tell you, I think it's infinitely better than having a three-hour and a six-hour bundle. So I think we're moving in a positive direction. Is this the best direction? I would tell you that people still argue pretty strongly about the amount of fluid that we're given, particularly using a number of 30 cc's per kilogram and having to push this on patients that have congestive heart failure, that already have anasarca or third spacing of fluids. It makes everybody kind of anxious. There's a lot of contention about this because there's not great evidence. I think things like early institution of antibiotics make sense. People are on board with that. I think getting the cultures, people are on board with that. I think where people are moving now, thankfully, in my mind, is earlier institution of vasopressors, not waiting for five different fluid boluses and the patient remains hypotensive before reaching for the vasopressor. So if we're going to move towards using vasopressors earlier, and certainly within 1 hour with fluid boluses that are not meeting the target blood pressure, I think that that's good. I just don't think that anybody can hold up and say the evidence is so robust that we absolutely must do this. And if we don't do it, then you won't get paid by CMS. I think we're not there yet. I just don't.
I think those are some outstanding points, Peter. Really, really well said. Rob, do you want to add on to what Peter said?
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I mean, I'm almost in complete agreement with Peter. I love the fact that they've consolidated these bundles into a single bundle. I do appreciate the various recommendations. The one I have a little bit of a hard time with, in contrast to what Peter said, is obtaining blood cultures prior to administration of antibiotics, especially if you're going to try and get two separate blood cultures. I think that in our patient population, which we have a lot of injection drug abusers and so forth, I think getting that second separate blood culture detracts or distracts us from the real interventions, which are given the antibiotics and the other interventions. I'm not so keen on that particular recommendation. I also agree that holding us to a standard as a CMS type standard of 1 hour is going to be very difficult across different populations. And if they're going to use that as a marker of who's a good ER and who's a bad ER, I don't really like that. I don't like the information being used in that manner. The various looks of the CMS recommendations, certainly the ones according to the recommendations for pneumonia, have not been borne out to improve outcomes. So I definitely would caution against moves in that direction. But overall, I do like the consolidation to a one-hour bundle. I agree in general with most of the recommendations other than that blood culture recommendation. And I don't think that we are ready to make this a mandate in terms of payment and CMS requirements.
Outstandingly said, Rob. And John, bring us home with your thoughts.
Yeah, I think everyone's done an excellent job. So I'll try to add in one or two additional points here just to go along sort of with what everyone says. And overall, I think Surviving Sepsis has done an amazing job in improving the care that we provide for sepsis. They've clearly done a tremendous amount of education and awareness that has reduced mortality worldwide in terms of how we manage patients who come in really, really sick. We've recognized now sepsis is a time-sensitive critical illness. I think that where we struggle is it's a still poorly defined syndrome. It's on a spectrum of just regular infection to dysregulated host response. And so the struggle is with these activations of when to tag someone as being septic. The definitions are constantly changing, and we can't even come up with a consensus on what the definition of sepsis is. Are we sepsis 2 or sepsis 3? Each hospital are practicing still very differently based on how they interpret the evidence. And so without a clearly defined diagnostic algorithm like stroke or STEMI, are we going to now say that we need sepsis coordinators that are going to hold a clock to how we're actually performing with these complex bundles. And I struggle with this to say that I don't think the problem's with the recommendation. I think when it gets taken up by the payment bodies or the organizing bodies like CMS to say this is a quality measure that we're going to keep track of, because it's really hard to actually measure compliance. Now, whether or not supported by evidence, the 1 hour change, I don't know. Like, so look at, in 2018, Chris Seymour published his large study looking at the New York City database, in particular, how our timeliness of completion of the bundles impacted mortality. If I remember correctly, the 3 hour bundle, particularly the introduction of antibiotics early, for every hour delay beyond 1 hour, there was a steady increase in mortality. Now, where the inflection point is for whether 1 or 3 hours is the cutoff, I don't think that there was anything to distinguish that in his risk-adjusted model. But if I remember the 30 cc per kilo fluid bolus, I think the mortality was flat, whether or not it was completed within the first hour or 5 hours. So again, putting this in the recommended bundle, I don't know that there's robust evidence to support early introduction of some of these components and mandate it. The fluids versus pressors question will hopefully be answered by a trial being done by the PEDAL Network, the CLOVERS trial, that'll be started within the next few months. With the use of fluid liberal versus early vasopressors in sepsis-induced organ injury or hypotension, I think that'll give us some higher quality data about the timeliness of these interventions. But again, that hasn't even been done yet. We won't even see those results for probably another 3 or so years. So I think that the evidence is still lacking overall. And last question, I guess, do I believe it's feasible within 1 hour of triage? Depends on where you work and what your resources are. Talk to a rural hospital that's in the middle of the United States, or let's say even beyond that, maybe not even in the United States or even third world countries. I don't know that this is translatable. So lots of questions surrounding that question.
So many outstanding comments. Really nothing more to add. As we're sitting here discussing this, from an ED director standpoint, I'm just simply thinking about how do we operationalize it within an hour? And while don't hold me hard to this number, my last look at compliance with the regulatory measures is really running about 50% or slightly under.
And that's we're the same,
right? 3 and 6 hour bundles. And, you know, in terms of trying to get it in an hour, I think there's a lot of operational issues with that. Guys, I really want to thank you immensely. This has been really a super helpful and really couldn't be a more timely discussion, as this just hit print in the June edition of Critical Care Medicine and Intensive Care Medicine. I know we're going to get lots of questions. This is being hotly debated across many different channels within emergency medicine, internal medicine, critical care, resuscitation. It will be the topic of discussion for months to come throughout the summer, no doubt. So please send us your questions if you have any follow-up for us regarding this new Surviving Sepsis Campaign 2018 update. Just before going, let us know what you think about the new website. We're adding back our old content from 2016, and we're going to look to recover the 2015 and before content to get up there for your listening and archive files. Just in the next few weeks, in Baltimore, don't forget we are having the Resuscitation 2018 course in Leadership Hall on the campus of the University of Maryland. You can take a look at the lineup, www.resus2018.com. And we've got lots of different options from live stream to full conference to the boot camp to single day registration if you can't make all days. And Peter, even though it's a few months away, never too early to start thinking about critical points. Do you have the dates for us for December this year?
So we do. It's always going to be the first weekend in December, and it's going to be at San Bernardino, so right outside of San Diego. So it's a beautiful time of year to be there. It's a spectacular weather and an even better location.
It is truly an outstanding venue, and you can take a look at that and register for Critical Points. It's www.criticalpoints.net. And you can take a look at just simply an amazing course, all the feedback. I can't wait. It's one of my favorite conferences of the year in December and a beautiful climate. All right, well, that's going to do it for this June podcast here on Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Looking for your feedback. Can't wait to receive your emails on this controversial topic. Until next podcast, this is Mike Winters once again from the University of Maryland School of Medicine. We will talk to you next podcast. Bye for now.